This episode is sponsored by Splendor in the Grass.
You're listening to The Plug with Neil Griffith.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Plug Podcast with me, Neil Griffiths. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. We got another good one for you. Before we start, if you haven't already, be sure to check us out on Instagram and TikTok at theplug.podcast or head over to the YouTube page at theplug.podcast to watch all of the previous episodes. Since we returned with new episodes, so far we've had Canadian actor Jay Baruchel, Canadian singer-songwriter Lauren Spencer-Smith. This week, we're going back to my emo roots. I'm joined by one of the legends on the scene this week. My guest is the Used frontman, Bert McCracken. Bert was kind enough to come on the show while the band are on tour right now with Pierce the Veil in the US in support of the Used's latest album called Toxic Positivity, which is out right now. I last had a proper sit down with Bert right before their last album, Heartwork, came out in April 2020, right around the time of the global lockdowns due to the COVID pandemic. On this episode, Bert talks about how his mental health drastically declined during this period, even having to call off some shows, which culminated in returning to the studio for this new album. We also spoke about the emo comeback and why the Used never left. And Bert clears up talk about a possible My Chemical Romance and the Used joint headline tour that he teased a few years ago. Just a trigger warning before we begin. Within the first 10 minutes of the episode, Bert and I do discuss anxiety and depression. Listener discretion is advised. Here is my chat with Bert McCracken on The Plug Podcast. All right, I'm joined on the podcast right now by one of the legends of the scene, Mr. Bert McCracken of The Used. Sir, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, man. I know it was a little fast hustle there. You're backstage in Philadelphia right now. The Zoom was answered by an older gentleman who was seen to be hustling down some sort of hallway, so that was fun.
Yeah, that's my tour manager, Ivan. He is a hot.
dude, it's so good to see you again, We're kind of filling each other in right before we started recording. We did the podcast at, like, Good Things 2019 Festival in Sydney. And then we caught up again when you were promoting Heartwork. I think it would have been like a week or two before the, so early April 2020. What a couple of years, huh?
Yeah, it has. How you been?
You know, it's been a rough few years, Bert, if I'm honest.
you can say that again. Who are you telling?
Well, you mentioned as well, you said like you're from America, still living in Australia. I'm an Australian living in the US right now. I've been in New York for about a year. Right. How is Sydney treating you?
Yeah, I love it. It's really peaceful. It's really kind. It's a great place to raise two beautiful daughters. So We're happy. We love it.
Yeah. And obviously you are on tour right now with Pierce the Veil. Welcome back to the US, I guess.
Yeah, it's good to be back. This is a rad tour. It's going really well.
Yeah, I was pretty devastated as well, because obviously right now you're touring with Pierce the Veil. And I think it was even as early as last month, you were in Australia touring with Papa Roach. How were those shows, dude?
So much fun. So much fun. Papa Roach is one of the nicest bands you could ever meet. So it was all hangs every night. Beautiful, big rock shows. Tons of excited people. Couldn't have asked for anything better.
Yeah, you've been in Australia for a few years now, right? Living, I mean.
Yeah, I think almost 11.
Oh, wow. Legal, like, for a citizenship now? Have you got one?
It should be, but I hop in and out of the country so often that it kind of holds up the process a bit, but I'm on my way.
Good. Dude, the Used album Toxic Positivity, it's been out for a few weeks now. Congratulations on this record. Again, we last caught up as you were promoting Heartwork. And I remember that conversation well. And for people listening, we were so early in the pandemic that we were doing that call over a phone call. We hadn't even got hip to the fact that you can do this shit over Zoom.
Yeah.
And I remember we were kind of talking about the album. And again, that's one of my favorite Used albums of your entire catalog. And we were talking about, like, what do you do now? Because you can't go out on the road. You can't tour. You can't really do anything. So to kind of give us a little platform to jump off, April 2020, what happened during that time? Because I kind of went back and listened to that chat, and you and I, as most people were like, we don't know what the fuck this is. We don't know how long it's going to last. Let's just, we'll see. We'll get back out on the road soon. What have the last few years been like for you and the band?
Yeah, it was pretty devastating. We got home from a really, really awesome tour, little club tour. We got home around February 25th. Mm-hmm. We had heard rumors that there was this virus out that was going to shut down the whole world. Our old manager was out of the show talking about it. And we were honestly really skeptical. Like, sure, that sounds right. Yeah, of course there's going to be a virus that shuts down the world. Sure enough, go home. A week later, everything shuts down. And I think at that point, we were just hoping and hoping and hoping, you know, it'll open up in 2 weeks. It'll open up in another month. It'll open up in 2 months. Really devastating. Felt like a blow to the face every time we had to wait another 2 months, another 3, 4 months, 6 months. It got fucking out of control. And yeah, it was horrible. It was devastating on my mental health. It was horrific for my depression and anxiety. And it lasted way too long. That's probably the story of the pandemic for everyone.
Yeah, of course. Was the big thing for you the fact that as a fucking working musician, you couldn't do anything? I guess you could record music at home if you had the resources, but you can't be with your bandmates in a studio. You can't be out performing shows, especially, again, as I mentioned, Heartwork was such a fucking good album. It was such a shame you guys couldn't get out there and tour that album specifically, right?
Yeah, I feel the same way. We made this incredible record. Mm. Like 28 songs or something. Mm. And what a fucking bum out really was. This record, the record Heartwork, it was insane. It was really, really great. And to not be able to tour it, to not be able to promote it was devastating is a common word around the pandemic. Mm. But yeah, these songs were awesome. And we felt the same way you did. We never loved a used record more than Heartwork. So yeah, it was a bum out. It didn't really see the light of day. I think it's a very, very underrated record.
What do you mean underrated? I don't know anyone who doesn't like it. I think it's because you didn't get to go out there and perform it, right? So people kind of not forget about it, but they haven't been able to see it.
Yeah, on a tour cycle, you go out and you play 4 or 5, maybe 6 new songs.
Yeah.
And with a new record out now touring, we kind of missed the opportunity to go out and play 6 or 7 songs from Heartwork because now we're kind of focused on the new record. There's a certain amount of songs that they used that we feel like we must play for the fan. Yeah. So it's hard to fit.
Is that frustrating as hell when you're 20 plus years deep into your career and there are these songs that you want to get out and perform, but like you said, you know, there are certain songs the fans want to hear this one.
I would say we absolutely love it. It's a little tricky to fit songs in, but we love the old songs just as much as anyone else. Mm-hmm. We have Taste of Ink, All I've Got, Buried Myself Alive, I Caught Fire, Pretty Handsome Awkward, Box Full of Sharp Objects. Those are the songs that must make the set list. To take those songs, feels really strange.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm buried with Blue and Yellow, but yeah, it's exciting. It definitely feels a little bit tricky when we have to add in songs. I don't even think we're playing a song from Heartwork on this on this tour.
Right.
It's tricky to fit songs in when we have so many that we feel like we must play for the fans and for ourselves.
Yeah. Well, as a fan who's seen you on Tuesday in New York, if you could play Blue and Yellow and then throw a few Heartwork songs in, I would really appreciate that. Just take the extra 20 minutes just for Neil, if you could.
Yeah, take 20 more minutes. We'll just cut Pierce the Veil set in half.
Yeah, totally. Are you playing before or after Pierce the Veil? Do you know? Because I know you guys alternate.
Yeah, we flip-flop, but I think the New York show is us first.
Right. Okay, cool.
We would play to kick this off, but
is there a what do you call it? Like a curfew on Pier 17, because for people outside of New York who don't know this venue, it is this fucking amazing rooftop venue that overlooks
the Brooklyn Bridge.
Like it's like a picturesque venue.
Yeah, it's one of the most incredible venues there is up, up on this rooftop. You can see the Statue of Liberty from the state. Really, really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have a hard curfew because of where it is and how loud it is.
Fucking cowards. Well, that's annoying. But I, again, I'm just working off this platform of Heartwork, because again, that's the last time we spoke. And I know you've said in some recent interviews, like pre-Heartwork, everything was great. Personally, you were doing really well. The band was killing it. The pandemic does happen, and then in August 2021, you guys go back into the studio. Where was your head at then, as far as did you even want to go back into the studio?
I think I always want to go back in the studio. I was a little nervous about my mental health, and but I understand that John can facilitate any kind of emotion and make it into a song. So in that way, I was excited to get in. Excited is a bad word. I was
excited to leave the fucking living room.
Yeah, I mean, or stuck in bed waiting to waiting to leave. You know? Sure. I can laugh about it now.
I was there as well. So many people I know. It's like you almost had like an identity crisis of like, what am I doing? Where am I going? Has what I've been doing the last 5-10 years, is this going anywhere? You could like, did you have that as well? You kind of just questioned everything you had done up to that point?
Yeah, it got to a certain point in the pandemic where I think everyone thought, man, this this has gone on forever. It might as well be forever. I always knew in the back of my mind that we'd get back. I just didn't know it would take so long. But going into the studio was a little bit of a relief, because we had just come off a Coheed and Cambria tour, and my mental health did not improve when the pandemic was over like I thought it would. I think a lot of people felt the same way. I went on the Coheed and Cambria tour and pretty much spent the entire tour in the back lounge, just kind of huddled up. It was a pretty miserable experience, except for the shows. The shows were amazing. Somehow I make it on stage. So coming from that high anxiety, stressful, the show must go on type of situation, being in the studio felt a little bit more relaxed, and like I can lay my mental health out on the table and kind of dissect it with John, and piece by piece kind of sort through feelings and emotions and kind of facilitate the song in a big way.
When you got into the studio in August 21, was the goal, like you had a conversation with the band, like we're all going to be making an album, or was this just finally we can get back together and even if it's as simple as just play a fucking song together in a room? Was the goal always, we're going to make an album?
Yeah, definitely. We worked really fast with John Feldman. Heartwork was, I think, I'm not sure if there's 28 songs. I'd have to check. But whatever it is, there's 20-something songs in 20-something days. We write a song a day. We try not to look back. We try not to overthink things. We get the structure of the song done and the lyrics done, and then we kind of pound out the guitar and bass and drums later on that night. It's a really quick and really enjoyable process for us. We all get to be really tight as a band, as a group of friends. Every idea is valid. We kind of, whether it's Dan giving me vocal ideas or Jeff giving Dan drum ideas or Joey giving Jeff bass ideas, it's really fully open. We're taking it as a group project. There's no one who shines more than the others. So in that way, it was good to kind of connect and try to put feelings, specifically put feelings into the record.
Yeah.
As much as we could.
And I know that was the first sort of session you guys did in August 21. And I think you said before that you were kind of content with that being the album. But then when did you guys get back in there and kind of refine everything?
It was late 2022, I think.
Right.
Somebody would have to double check that, but yeah, when we finished the first session, we had 12 songs. that were great, 12 songs that could have been the record. And then I think the more we sat on them, the more we thought, hey, we could probably have three or four more songs that are really, really sick if we went back in there, just to kind of top off the record. And we went back in and we ended up writing like another 10 or 11 songs. So,
wow.
And a lot of the songs from the second record made the, or a lot of the songs from the second session made the record. I think it was a little bit more positive. I had my head on a little bit straighter. It was still rough. It was still really rough going. I think both times we recorded, I was detoxing off a different drug each time. So I was in a middle state, sweaty, nervous, sweaty palms, hard to get out of bed, but somehow I was able to because of John Feldman.
Yeah. Feldman's on such a fucking roll, isn't he? Like, I had Dan from Story of the Year on a few months ago, and he produced their last album. And the man is just like Blink, Avril Lavigne, you guys, Story of the Year. I think he does like 5 seconds of Summer's album. Like, he's like the Travis Barker of producing. Like, he can produce with anyone and on anything. But you guys have been working with him, fuck, since day dot, right?
Yep, since 2000. We met him in 2000. We recorded the record in 2001 and put it out in 2002, I think.
Mm.
That's the right timeline. But yeah, he is family. When we first met, we knew we were going to get along great, and we did. He has always been able to pull you out of whatever situation you're in, whether it be happy, ecstatic, excited, in the middle, a little low, very low, depressed and horrific. So yeah, he's a brother to us. We kind of consider him a fifth member of the band. It's really cool with him. He's so quick. He's a genius songwriter. So it really helps in the recording process to have someone who knows about songs and about songwriting. He's a brother to us. We love him more than we could ever say in words. And he's been there for me through the thick and thin, and really brought me out of some really dark situations. 2004, I lost someone really close to me, and he drove to the studio to pick me up, and he's like, we got to make this a song, no matter how you're feeling. So that's kind of been the theme and the process of working with him. He works so hard that it kind of pushes me to work harder. And usually that would be the opposite. If somebody's working really hard and telling me to work really hard, I'd probably say, no, fuck. Fuck you.
Yeah.
But he's got this strong kind of friendly urgency to his writing process that, it makes me want to push harder.
I don't remember if I'm remembering the story right, but I think the last time we spoke, when it would have been around 2004, when the Used were really kind of hitting mainstream, and you didn't really like that, the fact that the band was blowing up in such a big way, and like you disappeared, you almost like ran away, and Feldman was the one that like was like walking through beaches looking for you. Am I remembering that wrong?
No, that's right. During the first record, I kind of freaked out a little bit.
Yeah.
With all the labels and all the excitement and everybody wanting to sign us and put us on MTV and all sorts of stuff. Kind of freaked out a little bit, whether it was my own self-doubt or whether it was just my upbringing. All my favorite bands have very, very little fans and were never on the radio. And, I always kind of used Converge as the example. They were never on a big label. They never tried to do anything outside of their, yeah, they just kind of stayed in their lane. I met this girl. I escaped to Santa Barbara, turned my phone off for like a week and a half, 2 weeks. And when I got back, he was very upset, but very, I don't even know what the word could be. He was, he was very, very mad at me, grabbed me, threw me back in the studio.
Wow. That's nuts.
Self-sabotage has been a part of my life, I think, for a long time. I think that when something's going really well, I freak out. I want to destroy it. I don't know why.
How are things now? You mentioned at the start of the show, you know, you have a beautiful family and two kids. You live in Sydney, Australia. How are things for you as of June 2023?
Yeah, I feel like we are out. I feel like there's no more pandemic left. Every show is just like the shows pre-pandemic. It wrecked my head. It really did. And I think, like everyone, I thought that I would be healed when the pandemic was over, but it stayed. It stayed with me as some residual nightmare. And I'm still dealing with it. Touring and playing shows helps a lot. I think that everyone can find something that helps a lot, whether it's drawing, painting, writing poetry. Everybody has a tiny bit of creative spark, whether it's, you know, building something or constructing something, or yeah, I think everyone has an outlet if they can find it. I found mine a long time ago, but yeah, it's still been really tough.
Yeah. Are you at that stage? I know a lot of bands have different opinions on it. Do you bring your family and or kids out on the road with you?
As much as I can. They were at the Sydney show, but
sure.
My girls are a bit too young to travel. They're a bit too involved in school and their extra activities. They do ice skating. They do all sorts of stuff. So it's a bit hard to bring them out. But when we were in Sydney, they both came out. They both sang solos. It was really incredible. My daughters have no fear of the stage. They have absolutely no fear of big crowds. It's pretty incredible.
Are they into music?
Love it. They're very into music.
As the father of those girls, with the music you're into, can you show them the stuff you're into? Like, would you show them a Converged?
Yeah, they like all sorts of music. They're really into pop, obviously. Sure. They love a good pop melody. But I can put on songs and they can enjoy dad's music as much as possible. Put on some Kim Dracula and they can rock.
You can put on like Lunacy Fringe. That's pop-ish, right?
Yeah, they like a lot of the Used songs. My daughter, it's so cute. My daughter just sent me like a voice memo saying, "Dad, I feel like when I listen to your songs, I'm getting a big hug from you."
So, oh, yeah. Jesus Christ. What song?
Any song. I think they're listening to the new record now. They love Fuck You. They love
it. Jesus. Do you have to be like F you? We don't say that word in that house.
No, the way we approach swear words is like, a lot of people think these words are bad. We don't know where that came from. We don't really care. But if you say it in school or you say it around your friends, you're going to get in big trouble.
It's kind of smart. They're going to say it eventually, right?
Yeah, of course. You can't stop people from being people, especially kids.
It's back and it's the most wonderful time of the year. No, I'm not talking about Christmas. Old Saint Nick wishes he could give you a gift like this. I am talking about the return of Splendor in the Grass. Splendor in the Grass Music and Arts Festival is back and returns at North Byron Parklands on the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd of July. Armed with another stacked lineup including Lizzo, Flume, Mumford & Sons, Lewis Capaldi, Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Hilltop Hoods, J Balvin, Sam Fender, Idols, and so many more, this is a festival you do not want to miss. You can get your tickets right now at splendorinthegrass.com. I'll see you at Splendor in the Grass 2023. I did want to ask you as well, and I've had a few guests on the show as well from that scene. I mentioned Story of the Year. I've had Vic from Pierce the Veil. I've had Andrew McMahon. Take away the pandemic side of things of the last few years. What has made a big comeback? And let's be honest, probably a lot of it has to do with being stuck inside and getting nostalgic, is the emo pop punk scene, whatever you want to call it. Right. How have you taken that? Because I know you guys played the inaugural When We Were Young festival, which was just fucking enormous. And so many bands from that scene are either making a comeback or they're just blowing up all over again. You know, like Tom's back with Blink. Yellow Card are about to start a tour. MyChem just finished a tour. As an emo fan myself and as a fan of that music since the early 2000s, the Used never fucking left. So do you look at that with kind of like, that's nice. You kind of like, fuck you. Making a comeback.
There's a lot of excitement. It really adds to everything. I mean, the resurgence of emo adds to the big crowds, adds to the excitement of the shows. So in a lot of ways, we're just excited to see a lot of bands coming back. There is a bit of we do have a bit of a chip on our shoulder, and we say it from stage. We never went anywhere. We never broke up. Been a band for 23 fucking years. Doing it the whole time. And not a lot of bands can say that. We feel really grateful and really lucky.
There's like very few, right? Like, and the ones, or at least the scale that you guys have had, like you guys have always been able to maintain that level of success. Like it wasn't like once that phase dropped off, you guys went and played in dive bars. You guys have always been playing big venues. The albums have always been so fucking good. But yeah, the scene has kind of like taken on a life of its own all over again. Like it almost feels like it's 2004 again.
Yeah. 2004 went to 2010 and emo kind of had this with EDM music. EDM music became very, very popular.
You know, Sonny Moore is now Skrillex. That's yeah. Still wild to me. When you look at old photos of Sonny Moore, the boy rocks a mascara. Let's just say that.
Yeah. We were good, really good friends. I think that riding out that wave was exciting for us to try to fight our way back up to the top, if you will. The youth has never really expected much from as far as being the biggest band in the world. When we first started, it was Warped Tour that was our measure of success. If we were able to play Warped Tour, then we succeeded as a band. So everything from then really has just been, what do they say, icing on the cake, if you like cake, which yeah. I hate.
Cupcakes?
Not into it. I'll have a pie or a cheese.
Good. Let's use that saying then. Have you been able to reconnect with like old friends from that scene again, like who maybe on these, like say when we were young, like this year, for example, like a band like Finch are playing. They were one of my favorite bands in the early 2000s. And I think like, aside from a few warm-up shows, this is like their first big show back since when I think they stopped in like 2011, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, it has brought a lot of bands out of the woodwork. I think a lot of bands see this explosion of this emo music and like, oh shit, we got to get back out there to reap the benefits. Like I said, there's a bit of chip on our shoulder, but it's really exciting to see people that we have for a long time. We're the type of band that if we tour with a band, they're family, and we like to make very close friends everywhere we go. We're very kind band. We're very nice. We don't treat it like some kind of expected. There's no hierarchy. There's no. We're really a socialist experiment.
It is weird because 23 years and there aren't a lot of bands. Fucking in general, like that can last that long. The only band that comes to mind, I've mentioned this band on the podcast before when I had them on, was Melancholin, very famous Swedish pop punk band. And I remember I had them on the show and I think it was Eric. I was like they haven't changed even one member in their lineup since day dot. And I was like, so how do you guys maintain that? They're like, oh, we don't talk outside of touring and recording. And I did that. That was my response. And I'm like, but really? And they're like, no, that's it. Like, We record the album, we tour the album, we're inseparable during that time, and then we do not fucking talk until someone sends an email saying, hey, I've got a new idea for the new album.
Yeah, that's...
Is that weird. Something you can look at? Because, say, even like with you and Jeff, for example, like you guys have... You're day dot guys.
Yeah.
What is your relationship similar to that at all? Or are you guys like, music or not, you're constantly in each other's lives?
Yeah, that's the strangest thing I've ever heard.
I felt like a dick when I laughed like how you just laughed. I was like, oh, maybe that's like normal for bands.
No, we're best friends. It's hard for musicians to have friends at home. So we stay really, really tight. We do a lot of things to keep the band tight as well. We know when to leave each other alone. We know how to deal with each other's temper and horrible eccentricities. And you know, before the show we play the entire set before the show, which is just like a bonding experience for us, and then on stage we're ready to go and we can look at each other like friends. And every day we wake up and think, this can't be real that we're still here playing to this many people. How is this real? We're blown away every day, and I think that makes us tighter as friends and tighter as a band.
Are you able, especially during those last few years, are you able to check in with each other and say, like, when you got someone like Felben there going, get in the studio and get this feeling out of you through that instrument? Do you guys need to go, hang on a second, no, we got to actually check, is this person okay? Does he even want to be here? Have those conversations happened before?
Of course. We we're checking in with each other quite a bit. We did a bit of recording, a bit of writing. I did a Rage Against the Machine medley with Jeff and the guys from some fun. We recorded some acoustic stuff. I can record, but I'm not the recording guy. I'd rather just be singing into a mic and on stage. I'm not very technical, even though I can pull it off. I kind of prefer not to, in a way.
That you mentioned Sum 41 then as well. Like, they've just announced they're splitting up. That's like probably like the only sad thing to come out of this resurgence, is out of nowhere too. Similar to like the U's, like they seem to just be playing bigger and bigger venues. Like, you've got the diehard fans, and then you're picking up new fans now. That's a real blow.
Yeah. They've been a really cool band. We've been friends with them for a long time. Crazy adventures with them. Like, we did South Africa with them, and we've just been around them for so long. Yeah, it's tragic.
I don't know if you remember this as well. And I'm like 80% sure you were joking when we spoke about this at Good Things. And it made like news headlines around the world. I'm not even kidding. When I asked you, this was like when there were rumors that MyChem were going to make a comeback. So this is like 2018, 2019. And you were like, yeah. I've like just reconnected with Jared Way, and we're talking about doing a tour together. Everyone was like, oh my God, they're using MyChem are doing a comeback tour. And I was like, I remember when Bert said that to me, like he said it with like a smile on his face. Like, he was taking the piss, and they're like, no, it's happening. Number one, is that bullshit?
Of course it is. I'm sure. I have talked to Gerard a few times in text, and it's not like we're enemies, but I don't know why they don't want to take us out. Maybe they're afraid. I'm just joking. Again, this is all bullshit talk. I do think, however, in all seriousness, My Chemical Romance and the Used Tour would probably be the biggest tour of all time.
Yeah, I agree. Too much of a dick question to like just say flat out to them, like, hey, how do you feel about touring together?
We've tried. I mean, obviously the option's been there on the table. And even when they did their tour, I'm like, pick us out. And for some reason, they're trying to avoid these. Maybe they still have feelings, you know, and we don't.
I don't know if they're actually doing like a proper comeback. Like, do you know if they're doing an album? They just did like a massive world tour, but I think they've only released like one song during that whole period.
Yeah, I have no idea. It doesn't make any sense to me. We don't function like that.
I'm trying to get another global headline out of here, please, Bert. So just anything, just lie. Yeah.
We're very involved with the songwriting process of My Chemical Romance's venture to come back. We helped them write the songs. They're putting out a record that we wrote, which is crazy. And they're all deeply, deeply in love with us. They call us all the time. They check in.
I'm going to cut out the part where you laugh, just so you know.
I don't want to ruin it, because it, like I said, it would be one of the biggest tours of all time. So cross our fingers, and I'm not sure they're even coming back again. I'm not sure if that was just a tour, or if they're going to put out a record or what. So we'll wait and see. And hopefully that could be a possibility in the future.
Yeah. Do you know what the next, I guess, 12 to 24 months looks like for the Used, with this album now being out? Is the plan kind of just tour and enjoy being back on stage? You know, we mentioned earlier, you've still got a whole batch of songs up your sleeve. Will there be a quick turnaround? What are the plans look like for you guys?
Well, after this tour, we're going out on a huge world tour for like, it's going to last like 2 years. We're going on a world tour with My Chemical Romance. No, the rest
there
of the
year. There it is. There's the exclusive, motherfuckers.
The rest of the year is looking really fun. We're going to do a headlining tour. We're going to do some overseas stuff. Hopefully get to places that we haven't been to in years and years and years. But we're so excited about this new record. I think that the most exciting thing to happen to us since the beginning of our career. And we're riding the wave. We love it. We're playing new songs that feel like we've been playing them for years and years and years, which is awesome when a song translates like that from recording to live. It's really cool. It's a good feeling. But yeah, there's a lot of plans. We'll see what plans come to fruition and what plans kind of get left in the dust. But 2024, 2025 are looking pretty good.
It's kind of fucked, but also like really cool how pre-Heartwork, everything was looking great. Heartwork, again, one of the best albums you guys have produced. Then everything went to shit. But through that, you've been able to produce, again, now one of another top-notch used album. Like, without that happening, would this album exist?
Definitely not. Everything that happens in life and everything that happens to us gets a place on a record for us. So whatever we're feeling at the time, that's the only thing we can write about. I think that should be the case with all art. Maybe people, I can't imagine a song coming out that's good and heartfelt that people faked when they made it.
Well, Bert, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate you taking time, especially that you're backstage at a show right now. I'll personally see you guys in New York on Tuesday next week. But yeah, man, it was so good to catch up, and let me know when you're back in Australia, because I obviously didn't get to see you guys last time, and now that you are there and I might be there, when are you off the road?
Don't know. We have a little bit of a break between this tour and the headlining tour, and then a little bit of a break before we go to the UK and Europe, and a little break, and then we'll be back out. So we're trying to keep the schedule pretty packed full.
Right.
We're riding the resurgence as well, this comeback. Really. And we've been an emo band for 23 years, so I don't think anyone can fuck with us.
Yeah, 100%. Like you said, you guys never left.
Yep.
This headlining tour, after is with Pierce the Veil, there's another headlining tour in the US after that. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Really excited about that, because out here we can maybe play two songs, the two of the new songs.
Mm.
But yeah, headlining show, you can play five or six and get away with it. It's really fun.
Yeah. But thanks again, man, for coming on. I can't wait to see you guys live next week. But congrats on the album again. And we'll talk soon, man.
Yeah. If you haven't heard our new record, Toxic Positivity, it's one of the most heartfelt records from the Used. And I hope you check it out and like it.
That was a good plug. I might put that at the start.
Cool.
Thanks, Bert. Appreciate that, dude.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for your time.
This episode is sponsored by Splendor in the Grass. To watch full episodes of The Plug Podcast, head over to the official YouTube page at theplug.podcast and hit the subscribe button to stay up to date with all of the video content. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at theplug.podcast for all episode announces, teasers, and giveaways.